This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. At the time that the Birds recorded that song, it was called Mr. Spaceman because that's all we had in space. Men. But this past week was the 30th anniversary of America's first woman in space and the 50th anniversary of the first woman in space, a Russian named Valentina Tereshkova. The first American, of course, was Sally Ride. Now we've got another woman who may be headed to space, following in a tradition of many others since Sally Ride. Her name is Jessica Meyer. She's an assistant professor of anesthesia at Harvard Medical School, who also works at Massachusetts General Hospital, and found out just days ago that she is part of the class of 2013 at NASA, one of America's newest astronauts. Jessica, welcome to America Weekend and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
As a person who grew up in the space race, I am always excited when I meet somebody who has the potential for going out there. You actually tried to get into the astronaut corps 4 years ago, but didn't. So when the phone call came this week, how exciting was that?
It was incredibly exciting, and I think still quite surreal and overwhelming, really.
Do you know when you leave and what your training is going to be?
Yeah, we will be reporting to duty in Houston and starting our new jobs on August 12th, so we only have a few weeks to wrap everything up here and get ready for our new adventure.
Okay, now there has been talk in some articles about you in the last couple of days that you could be one of the first people to go to Mars. Is that really a possibility?
Yeah, it could be a possibility. I mean, in general, I'm really just excited to be playing a role in NASA's human spaceflight program. Members of our class will be training for possible long-duration missions to the International Space Station. As you know, NASA will continue operating the space station at least until 2020, if not beyond that. And we'll also be playing a role in preparing for these possible missions in which NASA is now beginning to explore asteroids and Mars as well. So we'll see. I would be incredibly excited to play a role in any of that.
Yeah, I've talked to an astronomer named Phil Plait about the plans to go to an asteroid, land there, try to perhaps do some mining there. What do you know about those missions? We'll get back to Mars in a second, but tell me about the asteroid part of your possible future.
We'll have to wait and see. You know, we're really just beginning to get immersed in all of this now, and so I've been thinking more shorter term about what's going on right now in terms of the International Space Station. I have more experience with that because I actually did work for NASA for 3 years supporting experiments on the space station, so that's kind of where my mind is right now, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Obviously, you're a longtime scientist, and that's got to be part of what drew NASA to you. What else made you such a good applicant?
Well, I've wanted to be an astronaut since I was about 5 years old, so it's always been in the back of my mind, and I think I've been always trying to involve myself in NASA-related activities throughout. I mean, you really will have to ask them why they chose me. I'm still in shock. You know, when you go down there and meet all the other incredibly amazing and diverse and accomplished individuals that are interviewing, it's quite humbling. You really, really aren't sure that they'll actually pick you in the end. But I think, you know, they like people that are quite well-rounded. They like people that have a little bit of operational experience. You know, I think maybe my experience working in remote environments like the Antarctic probably helped a little bit, scuba diving, flying planes, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm going to get to the plane part in a second, but I'm fascinated by your life not only in the Antarctic, but under it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
What were you there for?
I went to the Antarctic 4 times for my PhD research with emperor penguins, and in that work we were trying to understand the diving physiology of the emperor penguins, trying to understand how they can dive for so deep and so long. They can hold their breath for almost 30 minutes. They can dive to 564 meters, so incredible divers, and we were looking at how they manage their oxygen stores in order to do that. They're air-breathing, breath-hold divers just like we are, but of course they have a much more impressive diving capability. So I was there for 4 seasons for about 2.5 to 3 months at a time studying the penguins. Basically, we would put backpack recorders on them so that we could monitor different aspects of their physiology, like heart rate and the levels of oxygen in their blood while they were diving. We also did a little bit of diving as well down there, which is an unbelievable experience. So we did a little bit to observe the penguins during those seasons. And then in 2009, I had one more opportunity to go back to the Antarctic. And this was not to work with penguins this time, but just to dive. So we were there for about 10 days with a team from the Smithsonian Institution to test diving equipment in the underwater environment and to try to select some new regulators and other diving equipment that would function well.
Oh, okay. Well, now we got something to talk about here because I've done a lot of scuba diving in my life, but it's all been in warm climates, the Caribbean or Australia or, you know, places like that. What is it like in the extreme cold?
It's really phenomenal. I can't imagine a better place to dive. You're, of course, diving in dry suits to stay dry so that you can stay a bit warmer. And it is pretty amazing how warm you do stay with the dry suit. Of course, that area around your mouth is exposed to the water, but that goes numb pretty quickly and you don't really feel it anymore. But I'll never forget the first time I plunged in, and you're diving through an ice hole and it's a bit slushy at first in the hole and you're not sure what it's going to be like. But then you come out and the first thing that really strikes you when you're underneath the surface of the ice is the visibility. You know, in the winter and early spring, you can see about 900 feet. When we're there, it's still several hundred feet, which, as you know, as a diver, is really phenomenal. You're just your mind has a difficult time processing that.
Yeah.
You feel like you're looking through air instead of water. And then the light is coming through the ice holes and the cracks in the ice, so these big beams of light shooting down. And you've been in this Antarctic, very white, austere environment that's devoid of any life, and suddenly when you come underneath the water, that's where all the life is. You see all these really brightly colored creatures on the sea floor. It's really a fascinating view.
Now, obviously, if you do get to go up into space on a long mission, you'll be in a pressurized cabin, but will having had that experience of the extremes of the Antarctic and the water under the ice there translate to what you're going to be doing in the astronaut corps?
Yeah, I think those experiences will definitely help me with the training, and I know once we get there, we'll be incredibly well trained. NASA is a great big team. The astronauts are lucky enough to sometimes be the face of it and be the ones that actually get to launch into space, but there are so many people on the ground working together as part of the team, and they do such a good job of training the astronauts that I think no matter what your background experiences are, you're ready to go when it's time for your mission.
As you know, Jessica, we don't have the shuttle anymore to transport astronauts back and forth. Maybe Elon Musk will be ready to take you on a flight on one of his missiles by the time he's ready to, by the time you're ready to go up there. But in the meantime, we've got to count on the Russians to get you up there and back. Does that mean that as part of your NASA training, you're going to have to become proficient in Russian?
Yes, that's right. And actually, I'm really looking forward to that component. I really, really enjoy learning about other cultures and learning other languages. We will be doing a lot of training in Russia because of their big role, you know, in the International Space Station and the fact that we're launching on the Soyuz. I am fortunate that I have a little bit of background now. When I worked there for 3 years, I did take Russian lessons. So I need to do a lot of studying and try to get a little bit of it back, and we'll be a lot more immersed in some really rigorous studies as well, but I'm really looking forward to that.
I mentioned the Mars and asteroid stuff earlier. What's NASA's timetable with those?
I'm actually not sure of the distinct timetable right now. I think you'd have to ask some of the offices that are directly working those missions.
Okay, well then I'll ask you more of the other side of the public relations question, which is, you know that we have listeners right now who are saying, you know what, we're having financial problems in America and we have other priorities on this planet. Why are we bothering to send this woman and the other people in NASA up into space to do all of this stuff?
Yeah, I think, you know, that is a legitimate question that you hear a lot. And for me, the biggest driver is really the spirit of exploration. I think humankind has always had this desire to explore, and I think that's behind many of the advances and discoveries we've made really as human beings. And so I think we really need to continue with that exploration in many other factors, even in addition to space and exploring our oceans and our home planet as well, in order to really advance ourselves as a civilization. And NASA's work also helps us better understand and protect our home planet. As I'm sure you're aware, we make a lot of observations from air and space, and we do a lot of research that's very relevant to understanding Earth's systems alone. And we're learning more about the biology of our own planet. We're learning more about the space impact on human health and physiology. We're developing new technologies that can benefit humans on Earth as well.
Yeah, science is good, exploration is good, discovery is good, and I still remember the feeling when this country came together with the rest of the world on July 20th, 1969, when man first set foot on the moon. I hope that someday we can have that feeling again when perhaps it's your footprint being placed on the surface of Mars.
Yeah, that would be pretty exciting for me too.
Jessica, I appreciate it. Congratulations and good luck with your astronaut training.
Okay, thank you very much.
Jessica Meyer, assistant professor of anesthesia at Harvard Medical School, and now one of the 8 people chosen to be part of the Astronaut Corps for 2013 by NASA. I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend. Oh, man.